Anyway, let God rouse us by his word now. Let's read from Philippians chapter 4 again. Verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So in the study of personality, we've come to the final of what are called the big five personality traits, and it's the trait of neuroticism. Doesn't sound very promising, does it? And it's a challenge if you have a neurotic personality, if you were born with a neurotic disposition, if you're not very emotionally stable. Because on the scale of neuroticism, at one end there are those who are really confident, really secure people, and at the other end there are those who are just dispositionally worriers and they're vulnerable. One end, there are people who are seldom disturbed much by events in life, even when they should be. And at the other end, there are those who really never can find peace in their lives until they find what Paul calls here the peace of God. Let me give you a couple of examples just to think our way into this. In the Old Testament, think of Samson's parents, Judges chapter 13. So before Samson is born, the angel of the Lord appears to them to tell them that they're going to have this child and tells them how to look after the child as well. And after the angel of the Lord has gone away, Samson's father-to-be freaks out. He's a bit like Private Fraser in Dad's Army. He says, "We're doomed to die," he says. "We have seen God." Judges 13 verse 22. We're doomed. We've seen God. There's a neurotic. His wife answers, "Well, if the Lord had meant to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and a grain offering from our hands, nor shown us all these things, or now told us this." There's an emotionally secure person. What a contrast. Same situation, same experience, we're doomed. One hand, and, well, if God wanted to kill us, he'd have killed us, but actually he wanted to do us good. Then we can think of perhaps the obvious example is Lazarus' sisters, Mary and Martha in Bethany. Mary, this is at the end of Luke chapter 10, sitting at Jesus' feet, calm, stable, secure, listening to his teaching. Martha, well, Jesus says to her, "Martha, Martha," he says, "you're worried and you're troubled about many things." So one is emotionally secure, one is neurotic. Jesus, however, shows deep sympathy and compassion with both sisters, as he does with personality types, whatever they are, with your personality type this morning. But what we're saying is this, and what we've said all along is, personality is something you're born with. It's your natural disposition. It's innate. It's not something you can just decide upon. You can't reach your 21st birthday and say, "Well, I'm going to be an agreeable extrovert, emotionally stable person." You can't do that. It's your personality. Coarse environment has some effect. And particularly with this one, neuroticism, if you're born with a naturally neurotic personality and you're in a chaotic environment as you grow up, it's really not going to be good for you. You're going to grow up as a very nervous, jumpy, insecure adult. Whereas if you'd been the same child brought up in a really stable environment, you might have been able to find the kind of emotional helps and stabilizing influences and patterns of thinking that would have really overcome the worst excesses of your neurotic personality. So which are you? Maybe you're just in the middle, and that's fine too. Let's diagnose ourselves as we've done each time. First of all, are you someone who's pretty much always on an even keel? Seldom much troubled by your circumstances? Seldom irritated or angry? Having a pretty consistent mood? Very little given to suffering from the blues? Well, if that's you, if that's your personality type, I would say a prayer of thanks to God. And I would also spare a prayer for those who you may find very difficult to understand. The worriers. People who are at the other end of the scale in this particular trait. That you're always thinking, what are these people on? If you're a stable person, you probably can't understand the neurotic. But what if you are neurotic? If you're neurotic, your peace of mind very much depends on your environment and your circumstances and the people around you. So are you easily stressed out, easily upset, easily made angry, easily panicked or saddened or made to feel threatened or offended, so that your moods change frequently and emotions often overwhelm you? Do you worry and grumble about your problems? Do you get envious of others when you think that they do better than you do? Do you sometimes feel out of control, hopeless, helpless, demotivated? Sometimes do you feel consumed with an annoying sense of guilt about nothing in particular? That's a neurotic. Now remember this. There's nothing morally wrong with having a neurotic personality. It's something you're born with. It's just the way you are. It's what you do with it that's key. With the children in Kyle this morning, I read extracts from a classic, Mr. Jelly. Now, I guess you've all encountered Mr. Jelly. Perhaps you've read it to your children or your grandchildren. And Mr. Jelly, poor Mr. Jelly, was frightened of everything and anything. It begins. And then he encounters a leaf brushing gently against the window. What's that terrible noise? Oh heavens, the house is falling down. Oh disaster, it's an earthquake. Oh calamity, it's the end of the world. And so it goes on. He pours milk on his cornflakes, it says. Snap, crackle, pop, they go. Oh, goodness gracious, diving under the kitchen table. Oh dear, I hear guns. Oh, calamity, it's war. And so goes on. And Mr. Jelly meets a tramp who diagnoses his problem and tells him the thing to do is take a deep breath and count to 10. I told the kids this morning that there was better advice in the Bible than that. And here it is in Philippians chapter 4, but we're not quite at Philippians chapter 4 yet. But we can be like Mr. Jelly all the way through life, if we've got neurotic personalities. And that's tough. Or, we can build, and it takes time, we can build character. We can build a way of looking at life on the basis of the fact that in the Bible, by far the most common command that we're given is, do not be afraid. Far and away the most common command in the Bible. And we can become Christians, if we're not ready, and put our trust in God, put our trust in Jesus Christ into practice day by day and find the stability that we can't find within our own emotions because of our personality. Now, we all need stability. Isn't that right? We all need stability. Some of us probably feel fairly stable just within ourselves. But some need stability from other people around. And if you're neurotic, then you're particularly aware of that. You need stable people. You want a stable spouse, for example. You want stable household. You want stable friends. You want a stable upbringing. You want stable colleagues at work. You want a stable neighbourhood in which to live. And if you've got these things, you will be greatly reassured and stabilised. But the greatest comfort for the anxious, the worried, the nervous, those with volatile emotions, is to know the peace of God. God is a rock. God is a fortress. God is a strong tower. There's a wonderful picture in the book of Revelation, chapter 4 of the book of Revelation, verse 6. You see the throne of God, and it's a really, truly awesome sight, picture that's given there. And we're told that around the throne of God, this throne of God from which all the commands in the universe are issued, this throne of God on which all the responsibility of the universe rests, around this throne, there's a sea. And Revelation 4:6 says it's like a sea of glass, as clear as crystal. So despite the sheer weight of responsibility, sheer concentration of activity that there is on that throne, there is complete calm, a complete absence of turmoil, turbulence, disturbance around the throne of God. God is calm. God competently and confidently carries the weight of the universe on his shoulders, the worries of mankind on his shoulders, undisturbed. And that's remarkable. It's a great picture because living by the sea, we all know the sea is never undisturbed. Even on the days when it's calm, there's still a bit of surge, or there's maybe boats passing that upset it, or there's currents moving the water. But this sea of glass around the throne of God tells us that God is totally in command of circumstances, of events. And there is no better company that you and I can keep, no better relationship that you and I can have than that company, that relationship we can have with God through Jesus Christ. Because it's in that relationship that we can really find a level of security and calm and peace and reassurance that we just can't find anywhere else in our lives. There's lots about this in the Bible. Just Jesus says, I want to gather you like a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. We want to come in under the shadow of God's wings. Or Psalm 91, we want to come in to the secret place of the Most High God and abide under the shadow of the Almighty. You know, what a wonderful picture. That's the kind of stability, the kind of calm that God would want to bring us to. That he would be in our lives our calm center. Do you have this morning, personally? It's not just nice words. I mean, we're talking about reality here. We're talking about something that is real for those who have it. Do you have it? Maybe that this morning you're a naturally secure person, a naturally calm person, and you may be just sort of sitting and thinking, well, I'm okay in this. I don't really have much tremor or turbulence in my life. I cope. I deal with things. I have mechanisms by which I can handle even the most severe upsets in life. I'm strong. I'm not shaken. You will be shaken. Someone said to me earlier this week, I'm trying to remember where it was. I think I was visiting someone in hospital, actually. I'll tell you who it was. I'm glad I remembered this. Yeah, I'll tell you who it was. It was Mary Lamont, my predecessor's daughter. Mary Lamont. I was in Inverness. I was down in Edinburgh this week. And I travelled back on Thursday. I had a few bits of business to do in Inverness. Popped up to see Cameron Sharp in hospital. And a really nice time with him. And I, in the middle of it all, I stopped to have a pizza. To try out this new taste card thing I'd got, which gave me a half price pizza. And sat down, and who was sitting at the table next to me but Mary Lamont. Mr. Lamont's daughter. And where had she just been? She'd just been at her mother's 100th birthday party. Okay, that's where she'd just been. She'd just come from there. So I sat and had my pizza with her and we had a good chat. And I was telling her that I was just going to go up and visit Cameron, actually. I was saying, he's a young lad, a lovely young lad, I said, and he's just had this really horrible infection that's really suddenly affected him. And we're sort of saying, you know, you can be just a young lad, you think everything's just going to be brilliant in life, you're just going to sail along. And she said something along the lines of, yeah, but trouble comes to us all. She said, I remember how at family worship my father often used to pray, quoting from the words of Job, man is born to trouble as surely as the sparks fly upwards. She said, I thought it was a very strange picture. You can look at that in the book of Job. Just like as sparks fly upwards when a fire is burning, so man is born to trouble. So you will find trouble in your life, even if you don't have just now. What will it be that will stabilize and hold your life firm? Even you think, well, I'll cope through anything. Hebrews 12 verse 26 says, God has promised, once more I will shake not only the earth but the heavens. And then it says, the words once more indicate the removing of what can be shaken, that is created things, so that what cannot be shaken may remain. God is going to shake this whole creation. Jesus Christ will return, the day of judgment will come, and everything that is not built and established on Jesus will be shaken and it will fall. And if your life is not built, then no matter how emotionally stable you've been throughout life, if it's not built on Jesus, it will fall. And even if you've been a real neurotic, but you've trusted Jesus, you will stand. How? Well, let's turn to Philippians 4 and look just briefly. And I would encourage you, if you're particularly if you find this an issue for you, that you find it difficult to be calm in life, to meditate on the words of Philippians 4 from verse 4 through to verse 13. Because I'm just going to go through them really quickly. But you might want to go through them in real detail, because they're great words. The Philippians may have been a particularly nervy lot. I don't know. Certainly if you look at the establishing of the church at Philippi in Acts chapter 16, remember there's Lydia, the dealer in purple, and then there's the Philippian jailer. Now you could certainly make a case for the Philippian jailer being a neurotic, very jumpy sort of person. Mind you, there was an earthquake and he had the charge of all these prisoners and he thought they'd maybe escape. He was going to kill himself. Philippi was a Roman colony, and the Roman army officers retired to Philippi. So it was full of ex-army types, full of post-traumatic stress syndrome, probably, full of all kinds of troubles on the basis of that. I can imagine it was a pretty rowdy place. It was also, as we see in Acts 16, a place full of the occult, full of demonic influence, jumpy demons, lots of superstitions, plenty, if you like, to put the citizens of that city on edge. And what Paul is saying in this letter is, you can do something to stabilize your lives in turbulent times. You can do something to make a difference to your neurotic and anxious lives through Jesus Christ. And that thing is to build character. Remember last week I was saying there's a difference between character and personality. And this is how I would describe it. Personality, as we're saying, is something that is really a result of birth, substantially. Yes, breeding, but mainly birth. It's what you're born with, it's genetic. And so you haven't really got any control over personality, but character is different. Character is how you rationally respond. It's how you think in situations. And you can determine that. You can't determine your personality, but you can determine the way you think. And the Christian is someone who determines to think according to what God shows them in his word and according to the example of Jesus Christ. So we saw last week in Romans 12 verse 1, God says, in view of God's mercies in Jesus, present your bodies as living sacrifices to God, which is your rational, your reasonable service, is what Paul says. It's about how you think. You decide, Jesus did this for me, therefore I will present my life as a living sacrifice to God. And that's character. That's not personality. That's not sort of instinct. That's something you've thought about, you've worked out, and you've decided to do. And what Paul is saying here in Philippians 4 is, here's how to develop character in the face of anxieties, troubles, worries, instability in your life, so that you can be stabilized even in turbulent times. Here's how to develop Christian character which can control your personality. So let's just go through it quickly. Verse 4. Rejoice in Jesus. Rejoice in the Lord. Always. Now, there's a lot in that, if you think about it. It's about rejoicing in someone other than yourself, for a start. So it takes you away from yourself, because you're not the stable one. And it puts you looking to the one who is the stable one. And you start thinking about him. You start rejoicing in his rule, his throne, his grip, his confidence, his security. And that in itself gives you calm. But there's more. Verse 6. You tell him, the Lord, about your circumstances, the ones that are troubling you. You tell him. So verse 6. In everything by prayer and petition. Everything by prayer and petition. You tell him. Now watch how you do it. Because I know I've caught myself praying like this many a time. You go to God with your problems and you start telling your problems and you tell him your problem. You tell him, and the problems seem to get worse and worse and worse because you're spending far too much time describing in all kinds of detail all the horrible possibilities of what your problems might be. Instead of just saying, Lord, here's what's wrong, but you're great. When you pray to God about your problems, just give him the outline. He knows what they are anyway. You don't need to explain all the ins and outs. You don't need to, okay? It won't do you any good, and it won't do him any good. Just say, here's the problem, Lord, but you're bigger. Keep that in mind. He's bigger than your problem. Another great thing is just that word in verse 6, thanksgiving. By prayer and petition with thanksgiving. Tremendously therapeutic to focus on the positives. Because when we're focusing on our problems, as we do as neurotics, we focus on the things that are bad. We need to stop. And character says, right, I'm going to rise above what my personality would have me do, which is dwell on the problems and how bad they are and worry about them. And I'm going to focus on all the things I can thank God for, because there are still good things in my life. And we can thank God for all the things that really are still stable, that are really still good. God remains in his throne. He's still in control. Thank him. That'll help too. And then ask him to help you. Verse 6. Present your requests to God. Ask him to help. He's not going to go in a flap. It's not going to be too difficult for him. Too complicated. Ask him. And then here's the challenging one. Trust him. Okay, trust him. Because if you trust him, verse 7 will happen. The peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. This morning I was having some difficulty praying. And I just prayed the Lord's Prayer. And I thought, you know, it's really good sometimes when you just got something that's just kind of written down just to go through when maybe you haven't got a prayer of your own. And what I'm saying here is do this when you're anxious or troubled too. Just go to Philippians chapter 4 and go through these verses and do what they say. And if you do what they say and trust him, then your anxieties will recede and verse 7 will become your experience. And it won't make sense because your problems are still there. But the peace of God will capture your heart. We're not finished yet because verse 8 and 9 tell us more about Christian character. Really make sure you're thinking about good stuff. There's a lot of bad stuff to think about. You can spend a lot of time thinking about all the worst possible outcomes and all the doom and gloom and the dystopia of society. But verse 8 and 9, let's read them. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. There's the peace again. Peace from the throne of God, the God of peace, because your character is in action. Your Christian character, which says, okay, I've got this personality and it's jumpy and it's anxious, but I'm not going to feed it by thinking about terrorism and thinking about the potential for my food to be poisoned and the diagnosis to be the worst possible and so on. I'm going to think about whatever is lovely, whatever is pure, whatever is admirable, whatever is praiseworthy. That's Christian character. Your logic, your rationality, your thinking, overcoming your personality. There's more still. Think about other people and devote yourself to them. Verse 10, Paul says, it's great, you Philippians, have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you've been concerned, but you had an opportunity to show it. You've sent, and this is verse 18, you've sent Epaphroditus with gifts. You've been thinking about me. That's good. Good to think about others. If you think about other people, you can't be introspective. Thinking about other people prevents that downward spiral into getting sunk in a morass of your own making. Think about other people. Give yourself to other people. Now, if you do all of these things, and as I say, it's not something that happens overnight, you will learn. That's what Paul says. Verse 11. I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. You will learn this too. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. Whether well fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, I can do everything through him, through Christ, who gives me strength. It's a great place to reach. Now, Paul had more reason than most to be anxious. You know that Paul had all kinds of issues. He had health issues. He had issues of persecution. He had the responsibilities that Jesus had laid upon him for the church. There was all kinds of things that could give Paul sleepless nights and ulcers. But he has learned a secret: to be content. And if you put into practice all the things that Paul's describing here, which he's put into practice in his own life, you can reach that place of contentment. But it's a result of Christian character. And if you've got a personality that is discontent because it's anxious and because it's easily swayed in its moods, this is the path that God tells you to follow to find peace. And indeed, it's a path he tells us all to follow. Because every one of us knows what it is to worry. And every one of us knows what it is to be afraid. Every one of us knows what it is to be disturbed in our moods and emotions because of contrary circumstances. And if we can achieve this calm centre in our lives, then, verse 5, our gentleness will be evident to all. The word gentleness there, it's a hard one to translate, actually. I read quite a bit about it because it's quite a it's quite a complicated word. But it's like calm. It's like calm that will not be disturbed. It's like being the kind of person who doesn't feel you need to control people around you so that you get the environment that you want, that is easier for you to live with, because you find it difficult if it's not the way you want it. You're forbearing instead. You let people be. You're not demanding on them, but you're gentle. That's the kind of picture that's in that word. And if you've learned through developing Christian character how to deal with your personality and find peace in God, even in the most troubling circumstances, then other people around you will say, "How did you manage that? You used to be the most neurotic person. What happened to you? How did you change?" You can tell them, well, in this changing world, in this troubled world, I have found where there is stability. It's on the throne of the universe. It's in the person of Jesus Christ. There's where the calm is. And I have trusted him. And whenever there's trouble, I take it to him. And I think about the good things that he's given, not about all the bad things that are in the world. I think about the good things. And he gives me his peace. May God give to each one of you and myself too, day by day, the ability to develop Christian character, to rejoice in the Lord, to take your prayers to God with thanksgiving, to think about good things, to devote yourselves to others, so that you can learn the secret of being content, whatever your circumstances, and so that secret you can share with others, so that they too can know the Saviour, Jesus Christ. Amen.